And hello, it is Thursday evening, and you are on Intuitive Soul Radio with your host, Laurie Houston. This evening, we have a special guest and a special show. We have Peggy McCall, who is an internationally recognized expert in the area of destiny achievement, whose purpose is to make a positive contribution to the lives of millions of others. She's been inspiring individuals, experts, professional athletes, and organizations to reach their potential for the past 25 years. She's the president and founder of Dynamic Destinies Incorporated, an organization committed to delivering sound principles for creating lasting and positive change. Welcome, Peggy.
Hey, thanks, Laurie. It's a pleasure to be here.
You know, I'm very excited because, Peggy, we were going to talk a little bit about the book that she did before, which is 21 Distinctions of Wealth. And we had a great show on it, and I thought we would, you know, sort of maybe go over it and see what things have been happening. But because it's a year book, it's, you know, we're not into the year yet. So we, on Intuitive Soul Radio, get to be the first person to interview her on her brand new book, Be a Dog with a Bone, Always Go for Your Dreams. And it's not being released until January, so we get an inside peek at her new book, and I'm very excited about that.
Me too.
Okay, so you have to tell me, you got your foreword written by Zelda the dog.
Yes. Now that's not easy. I had to beg.
I bet you did.
Well, you know, here's what happened. When I was working on the book, there was an article in the paper, and it was an article that had a headline, $100 Million Dog, and it got my attention. And it was about Zelda, and mostly it was about Carol Gardner, who owns Zelda, and how she was going through a very difficult time in her life, and she was going through a divorce, and she was taking all these cute pictures of Zelda, and she had these captions that she would write below, and next thing you know, she was doing these little cards. So her little cards became postcards, which became greeting cards, which became books, and at that time, and we're talking a few years ago now, this dog had produced over $100 million in sales.
Wow.
And so I was doing my book, Be a Dog with a Bone, and my desire was to have a bulldog on the cover. And I was actually at that time searching for the bulldog to put on the cover. And then I saw Zelda the dog being a bulldog. I thought, I have to reach out and find her. So I went online, and I did a little research, and I found her website, and I sent an email. It was one of those sites, you've probably seen them, Laurie, where you go on the site and there's no real email address, but you have to fill in a form.
Uh-huh.
So I filled in the form, and I said, you know, this is who I am. My name's Peggy McCall. I'm an author, and I'm trying to get in touch with Carol Gardner. I'd like her to write the foreword, or Zelda to write the foreword for my book, Be a Dog with a Bone. And that evening, she called me at home.
Wow.
And she was so excited. And when I sent her the book, we just became friends. It was like an instant connection, and we became friends. And, of course, Zelda wrote a wonderful foreword for the book.
Very sweet, yes. Well, I had to look her up, too, because I'd never heard of Zelda, so.
And did you, when you found her, did you notice that you've seen Zelda around? Have you seen the posters and the cards?
I think I have, yes. I think I've seen bits of her, definitely, before, yes.
Yeah, that's what a lot of people find, is that they, you know, they think, I don't know who Zelda is, but then when they go to the site and they see the pictures, oh, yes, I've seen that. Maybe you've even received a card with Zelda on it.
Yeah, exactly. So let's talk about your book. And I love how you write, you know, let's be very clear here. To be a dog with a bone does not involve growling, biting, snapping, barking, or mistreating any other human being.
Yeah, I added that. I self-published this book, and then it's being re-released by Hay House. They bought the rights to it, so that's why it's coming out January. Actually, you can order it now.
Oh, okay.
You can go online. I ordered a copy myself.
Oh, perfect.
So you can go to Amazon and .com. Actually, I didn't even check .ca, but I know it's available on .com. I've ordered a couple copies. And so when I did the edition, like the changes to this book, that was one of the things that I added, because when I first wrote it, I thought, well, people would assume that. And sometimes, you know, it's just like people say, well, if you're a dog with a bone, does that mean that you're, you know, you're snappy with other people and that you growl at them and you bite them? And oh, my goodness, no, not at all. Absolutely not.
Yeah. But the dog determination means holding on to that which you most value, as well as working in a positive way to make your dreams come true.
Yeah, yeah, it's not letting go or losing sight of what you value most. My goodness, no. It's just, you know, if you think of anyone who's achieved anything extraordinary, they were a dog with a bone. I mean, let's look at Wayne Gretzky, you know, a great hockey player of all time. I mean, he was a dog with a bone. Look at Bill Gates, you know, had an idea. And anyway, we can just sit here all night long and just rhyme off names. And, they, you know, they had adversity. They went through challenges. They probably felt like quitting at some point or at many points, and yet they persevered. You know, they held on tight to their dream. They wouldn't let go. They wouldn't let others take it away from them, and they achieved their dreams.
Right. And you use dog metaphors because these animals represent beautiful, admirable, and desirable goal-achieving qualities such as persistence, playfulness, loyalty, and unconditional love.
You got it. Now, I'm a dog lover. I love dogs. I have two. I have two myself. And so, you know, I just noticed from, and all my life I've been around dogs. My grandmother was the world's first dog psychiatrist. So even before Caesar, you know, was doing his thing, she was recognized as the world's first dog psychiatrist.
Really?
And she was the president of the Canadian Kennel Club, and she was editor of Dogs in Canada, and she was an award-winning journalist, and she was a dog judge, and great friends with Walt Disney and Lucille Ball and Mickey Rooney because of her great expertise with dogs.
Wow. Well, that's an interesting thing we didn't know about Peggy.
I know. Well, I discovered that when I was doing the research for my dog book.
Wow. So let's talk about dog determination. Grab hold of that bone and never let it go. The more you attempt to take the bone away from a dog, they'll sink their teeth in. The sheer dog determination. So when we, and you know, I have to say, part of this book allowed me to get really clear on what it is that I'm working on. We'll go into that later. But,
perfect.
You know, I guess one of the things is, you know, if you want to be dog determined, just like, don't let go of your dream. Hold that vision. Maybe not try and control the vision, but certainly hold on to the vision and maybe let it go.
Yes. Yeah, control doesn't is a very negative force, actually. So it's letting go of expectation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it really is letting go of expectation. At the same time, you know, that's where I think a lot of people get confused. Well, okay, well, I don't understand. You want me to hold on to my dream but let go of expectation? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That's precisely what I'm saying. So holding on to your dream means, you know, you've got the desire, you know, it's an intended result, yet it doesn't have to happen a specific way or it doesn't have to happen a certain way. We can't dictate to the universe how things are going to happen or when they're going to happen. There's a universal time. That's, things will happen when they're going to happen. Now, yes, we are creative beings and we can create that which we desire. We're doing it every day. But yet being a dog with a bone really involves, you know, staying connected to the dream and feeling what it's going to feel like when you have it. And that's holding on to it in a beautiful way.
Mm-hmm. And there are times that there, you know, it's difficult to hold on to that, such as if we have health challenges or doubts and fears. And, of course, other people.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Other people, even though well-meaning, can certainly create a lot of obstacles for us. They take away, well, I mean, they did it when we were children.
Absolutely.
Not meaning to, but certainly, you know, when we were children, we knew everything was magic.
You are right. You are right. And it's like you said, they don't mean to. You know, it's like they're doing the best that they can with what they know. And, you know, I had this conversation with a girlfriend the other night, and she's moved out west. And she was telling me that, you know, she's got these dreams. And she said her husband doesn't have the same dreams, and she's finding it really challenging because he's trying to squish, in her opinion, squish her dreams. And so, you know, I said, so, you know, what is it that's causing you to feel the way you're feeling? And, you know, what are you saying to yourself? Because nobody makes us feel anything. Mm-hmm. You know, we're the ones that are in control of how we're feeling. And she said, I guess, you know, that I'm thinking that he doesn't believe in me.
Mm.
And so I said, but do you believe in yourself? And it's okay, you know what, some people, not everyone feels the same way, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like my husband isn't the same as I am. You know, I'm definitely someone who's a bigger risk taker than he is. And my husband says to me, you know, he's trained a pilot. That's what he did for a living.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, Peggy, I plan where I'm going, my destination, I chart my route, I even plan for failure. So like have backup plan where you go about your life in a very successful way, of course, you know, which is witnessed and experienced. You know, you go about your life where you decide, I'm going to do this. You don't know how. You don't even chart the course. You just say, that's where I'm going, and I'm going to find a way. And you just embark on the journey. And it's so different from him. And that's okay. You know what? I respect him. He respects me. And sure, he might feel the fear, and that's okay. It's just I think we have to stay strong to our conviction, because sometimes it can feel very lonely when we're pursuing a dream because nobody else is buying into it. And you don't have the cheerleaders on the sidelines going, go, go, Lori, go, go. And so we've got to be our best cheerleader, and we're the ones that have to turn up the emotion of faith and really feel it. And then, you know, when it materializes, then the others are going, wow, you did it, you know, and you've achieved it.
Right. And so you sort of say face your obstacles, and the way to do that is to turn up the volume of your determination and feel the passion of your desire.
Yes,
and that will force
you. We forget, you know, we forget about the passion. We forget why we're doing what we're doing. And, you know, like recently my mom passed away. And, you know, that was an incredibly emotional experience for me.
Yes.
And, I mean, one of the most painful experiences ever, you know, because I lost my dad just a few years ago. I lost my brother as well. You know, he died of cancer, very young age. And so, you know, going through that experience, I felt exhausted, like physically and emotionally exhausted. All I wanted to do was sleep. It was sort of like my body's way of dealing with the grieving process, which is fine. So I acknowledged that, and I was definitely sleeping far more, probably twice as much as what I'm used to sleeping. And yet there were days, and I'd wake up and I'd you know, realize I have so much to do. You know, I'm working on another book right now, and, you know, I have these other projects and other products I'm creating and things like that. And I wouldn't feel like it, you know. And so what I would do is I'd remember. I'd just reconnect to what my passion is. I'd remember why I'm doing what I'm doing. And that was my fuel. That was like the ignite again, or the button that you push, the turbo button to get me going again. And it's just a matter of remembering and reconnecting to it.
And it helps you shift out of those negative, you know, not necessarily negative because we have to go through grief, but to get you out of that place so that you can refocus on, you know, what does get you through the day and what does fuel you. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Like there's a chapter in Be a Dog with a Bone called Keep Your Nose Wet. You know, like what to do when you're feeling rough. And because there will be times when you feel terrific or on top of the world. Mm. And you know, it's important to take care of yourself and to recognize we're a human being that has emotions that go up and they go down. And, you know, sometimes they're going up fast and sometimes they're going down fast. And it's not that we have to ignore them, you know, just take notice of what's going on and then, you know, use some strategies to feel better.
Right. And I think it's really important. I know that there are a lot of New Age books where and teachers that, you know, talk about detachment. And detachment is a great gift in some circumstances, but there are times when we actually need to go through certain things so that we can heal.
Yeah.
So it's really important to actually feel through some of these things so that we can heal it and take us to the other side.
Oh, you are absolutely right about that.
Mm-hmm. But I do want to talk about what to do when we're feeling rough when we get there.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay, so we're going to let go of limiting thoughts like should and ought, which is probably one of the areas that we don't realize that we're doing all the time, but that really limits where we're going.
It does, or it can.
Well, should and ought often do.
Yes. I remember Tony Robbins said, we should all over ourselves.
And I like, you know, be willing to explore new paths. If you travel the same route that you've been taking thus far, you'll end up at the same destination. And it's sort of the same as the definition of insanity. If you keep doing the same things and you expect a different outcome.
True enough. You're absolutely right.
Well, this is your book. You're the one that's right.
Oh, okay. Thank you for reminding me of what... See, Oliver Wendell Holmes said, we all need a lesson in the obvious.
And so this is the one, this part here is, what is your bone? This is where I, you know, started really thinking about what is it that I truly want the most. Because I do three areas in my work. One is the radio, one is intuitive clearing, and one is intuitive counseling.
Nice.
And I really thought about, what is it that I want the most? And what is it that I really am passionate the most of? And if I had to be honest with myself, it would be the radio.
Nice.
So I'm starting to think about that a little bit more. And the clearer I get, you know, some great things. I mean, you just gave me this book Monday night. And since then, I've gotten Hampton Roads to give me some of their authors. And I'm going to be getting a lot more authors in the next little while. So
fantastic.
It's really, it did a little shift for me in this last couple of days where it's like, whoa. So it really is important to know what you want and which part of your dream is the that you're most passionate about.
You got and then, it. You're absolutely right. I have a big giant dog bone on my desk. It's a rawhide dog
bone. Really?
And I have my dream on there.
Oh.
So you might want to do that as well.
There you go.
Just go to the local PetSmart or you know, whatever local dog food store you can find. They even sell them at the, you know, the big Loblaw store.
Yeah. And your dogs aren't taking it off your desk?
Yeah, but I'm sure they would. One of them would absolutely be up there and chowing down on that. I just don't let them.
Okay. So it's a boundary, is it?
That's right. I don't think he could get up there. He's little.
Oh, right. They're little dogs.
That's it.
But, you know, you talk about be clear, use positive words, and write the goal in present tense. And,
yes.
You know, I've read that, and I've known it for so many times and for so long, and there's still times that I write out a goal, and it'll be, you know, I want or I would like or I know that it should be I am.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, and I know enough not to do it in the negative, where a lot
or
of people,
future.
Or in the future, yeah, that's a big one. I mean, I always think of in the future, which
yes.
is ironic because I've known this for a long time.
Well, it's just a habit. It's just a matter of changing habits. I mean, you mentioned Hampton Road authors, and Neil Donald Walsh actually mm-hmm. was on my radio show yesterday, mm-hmm. and he's one of my great teachers. And it was in conversation with God when I had first read that. When you say to the universe or God, you know, or whatever, just say, I want something. The universe responds and says, indeed you do. And you will continue to have the experience and the feeling of wanting it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, you know, when I remember reading that, it was like a shift that took place. Because I'd been saying I am for a long time. And just that description of it really just added another level of clarity.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we get back to, you know, really knowing the excitement and feeling that passion. And if, you know, if when you're going through this, you realize that what you're wanting doesn't have that passion, then that's when we're kind of needing to figure out, why is it that we're still sticking to it? Why are we still pursuing this if there's not that deep spark and passion?
Yes. Yeah, I've learned to drop those things.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely drop those things. And, you know, there's many reasons for why we stick to, you know, attempting to accomplish things that we're not really passionate about. One, we might think that's the only route to get to our destination, so we figure we have to do it. Or two, it's somebody else's goal, so you know, we want to do it for them. Or three, someone wants us to do it, so or has said we're not going to do it, and we want to prove it to them.
Oh, I've been there.
Right. And so there's all those reasons. Or we feel like we have to do too much. And, you know, we just let go of that. And I remember hearing Jerry Nestor Hicks saying, life is just meant to be fun.
Hmm.
You know, let's have fun with this. Lighten up. I mean, they're always saying that in their programs, like, lighten up. You know, life is meant to be fun, and it's true. You know, I think you know, thinking back to my own journey of personal development and some other people, it's like, man, they're really uptight, or I was really uptight. And when we let go of expectations, And we still be dog with a bone, you know, still have that dream, and we're going for it, and we're experiencing it in the present moment. It doesn't mean you're not having fun. You know, as you talked about earlier, Lori, we're not biting and barking and growling at others.
Yeah. And you say that dreams are not always obvious, but it's when you find it within your heart. And I think that's really important.
I agree. You know, we just have to notice what we're feeling. And I'll give you an example of that. When I first became an author and I wrote my first book, and we're talking 8 years ago. It was my first book when I wrote my first book. And at that point, I was 41 years of age. So I'm 49 now. And did I have a dream for all my life to write a book? No. It was just something that sort of came to me when I was 40. Hey, you know what? I'd like to write a book. And the reason why I wanted to write a book is because I thought, you know, the books that I've read just seem to be a little more complicated than what it really is. And I think people are looking for simplicity, and that's why I had this desire to write my first book. And so when I did, when I wrote that first book, it was like a passion or a spark that was lit. And I realized that that dream was, you know, really a part of me and what I felt was part of my purpose in life. And so when I started marketing my book and I was making sales and, you know, things are happening in my business, a lot of other authors started contacting me and saying, Peggy, you know, I see you're having great success with this online marketing. Would you help me? And then I had to stop and say, wait a minute, is that part of my purpose? And then I thought, well, yeah, my purpose is to make a positive contribution to the lives of millions of others, and maybe it is with Neil Donald Walsh's books. Maybe it is with Wayne Dyer's books or Marianne Williamson's books or Debbie Ford's books. All of those people called me and wanted me to help them. And so I thought, yes, you know, I'm going to help them. And I loved it. I mean, I love, love, love helping authors. And now I work with authors. I mentor authors. I teach authors. It's part of what I call the hat that I wear. But I didn't plan that. And it was just something that just sort of happened, that came into my life. And then when the opportunity was there, I thought, do I want to do this? Yeah, I think I do. Yes. And then started doing it and realizing I love it. Absolutely love it.
Wow. Even more than writing?
Probably equally.
Okay.
I do love writing. You know, I don't know. Maybe writing's number one. I'm working on a new book that Hay House has bought the rights to. It's being released in 2009, September. It's called The One Thing.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a really interesting concept, because what it is, what the book is about, is how I searched for the one thing that would really fix my life, and how I found it. And then I was experiencing that in my life and living by that, and then I realized, nope, that's not it. And I searched again, and then I found it again, and I was carrying on. A period of time went by, and I thought, nope, that's not it. And so this went on and on and on until I finally discovered, after 20 years, what the one thing is. So that's what the book is.
Wow. Yeah. Well, you heard it here first, so I hope that we'll get to interview you again for that one in September.
That would be wonderful.
So the other thing you warn us about, which is, I think this is maybe falls in line with what you're talking about as well, which is sometimes we mistake some of our short-lived dreams, where we think, well, it would be nice to have. Nice to have a new car, nice to have a house, things that, you know, are nice to have, but not necessarily our passion, not our deep desire.
Yes.
And they may not come from our heart. They're just things that we think, well, that would be nice.
Yes, yes, yes. I had that experience, probably many times, but what immediately comes to my mind is my family always had a cottage. Right? So all my life, we would go up to the Muskokas. You know, every weekend, head up to the Muskokas. In my summers, I'd spend up in Port Carling. And I loved being on the water. Loved it, loved it, loved it. So in my adult years, I thought, I want to buy a cottage. And so a number of years ago, and this is when I was a single mom, I decided to buy a cottage, and I bought a beautiful cottage, like a gorgeous place, on White Lake in the Calabogie region in the Ottawa area. And took possession of it. And once I was there, you know, I realized, I don't really want this. And I had the house in the city, had the cottage as well. It was a lot of work, a lot of responsibility. And sure, it was fun, but it was like, you know, I had this dream for so long. I sold it. I think I took possession in June, and I sold it by October.
Wow.
It was sold. And then what was interesting, and this is going to sound a little bizarre, but a year later, no, it was more like 3 years later, I thought, you know, I really want a cottage. Maybe that wasn't the right kind of cottage. Maybe I need a cottage that's not so big and not so nice, because this place, the first place I bought, was just absolutely stunningly gorgeous, and it was like a home. It was like 4-bedroom and 3-bathroom. It was just a beautiful place, and like double-car garage and a gazebo and the whole thing. It was $100,000 that people had put in landscaping alone. And so I found this other cottage, which was a shack, that that we ended up doing some renovations, and I bought everything new inside. I had a decorator come in and clean it all up, but it was still a shack. You know, it was still smelt funny. And so I bought this place. It was a beautiful piece of land, and took possession of that. But, you know, it's still a lot of work, another grass to cut. I just didn't feel like this was the place either. And I had it for a year and put it up for sale and sold it. And I was just saying to my husband the other day, you know, that I always thought that I had this dream of having this cottage, you know, this waterfront place. And he said, well, maybe your dream is to have a permanent home that's on the water, you know, rather than a secondary home that's on the water. And he said, maybe that's where we could go for our retirement, you know, once Michelle's finished school and, you know, he's graduating off on his own or whatever. And, you know, maybe we'll get a place on the water. And perhaps that's the way it is. But it's an example of had a dream, went for it, had it, and thought, nope, this isn't it, and put it up for sale. And that's the great thing about choice, is that we can make changes.
Absolutely.
You know, something we've created, we don't want it, change it.
I think of that a lot as well when people say, well, oh, you know, all I really want is $1 million. It's like, well, you don't really want $1 million.
True.
You want the things that, you know, you want the qualities, those, the emotional things that would bring you, or the freedom, or the, you know, it's not really the money. It's all the things that it will bring you, or all the things that it will give you.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, a lot of times, if you can't put it into those types of places, that it often doesn't go very far, because it, you know, you can't really manifest it, because it's not really a money that you're, it's not really a piece of paper you're looking for. It's all the things that it will bring you.
That's absolutely true.
Yeah. And then you talk about how when it is your deepest desire, that the one thing, and I think, again, this is in the New Age community, you know, we sort of just, well, we have to wait for it to happen, or, you know, if it's meant to be. And so, you know, you talk about, you know, if you have to take action toward its attainment. And,
yes.
You know, you have to know, you have to achieve things to get there.
Yeah, it's so true.
And I think a lot of times that, you know, we think, well, if we can imagine it. And yes, I think part of that is a really big part. But if you don't, if the door's open and you're not taking any of the opportunities that are being given to you, then you're losing all. You're not going to get anywhere.
You're absolutely right. It's so important. Like, I've had some people, like just last evening, I was speaking at the there's an organization, I'm sure you've heard of it, called the E-Women's Network, and they have monthly dinner, and they asked me to come and be the speaker, and I was there last night speaking, and there was a woman there that I haven't seen since 1996, so 12 years. And of course, she's witnessed the changes and the things that I've created in my own life. And she came up to me, she said, wow, you know, I'm so happy for you and thrilled. And she said, you're so lucky. And I'm thinking, well, luck, we can call it that, I suppose. But, you know, it's like you said, you know, I took the action, you know, I did the things. And we're not even talking about, you know, working 20 hours out of a 24-hour day. I don't think that's really what's required. But it was just a matter of getting clear on what I wanted, you know, understanding what really, really turns me on, like makes me excited and I'm passionate about, pursuing those dreams, you know, like the dog with a bone. And that's why I wrote this book. I wrote this book because I was standing on stage and I was speaking at the launch of my very, very first book. And the book was called On Being the Creator of Your Destiny. I said I should have called it Be a Dog with a Bone, On Being a Dog with a Bone. And everybody laughed. And I talked about that. I said, you know, if you want to be an author, you absolutely have to be a dog with a bone. Because, you know, some people think it's real easy. And it's not so easy. I mean, there were so many things that I went through, and I just shared some of my you know, wonderful experiences and learning experiences of being an author, and then realizing that as an author, you have to get behind your book. You've got to be a marketing machine and find ways to market your book, because you write a great book, the buyers just don't often stampede to the bookstores to get it. You've got to market it. You've got to get it out there and let people know about it. And so that's when I said I became a dog with a bone, although my sister-in-law says I've always been one. Not sure what she means by that. But maybe she means I've always been a dog.
I think she just means that you've always known what you wanted, and you've been persistent. You exude the confidence, and you see no other possible outcome.
Yeah, when I was a kid, they used to call me the brat. My aunt still calls me the brat, which I take as a compliment. I say, thank you.
Wow. So you give a formula: desire plus focus plus courage equals determination.
That's it. That's the formula for the dog with a bone recipe.
Yeah. And I mean, I think, you know, I just, it's a great visualization, really, of, you know, really, and I mean, it's a very playful, fun book, but it's very much a visualization of, if this is what you want, think of a dog with a bone. Like, think of everything that you want to do in creating your determination and your focus and your drive and really holding on to that vision so that there's no other possibility.
Yeah, you're right. I'm glad to say it's a fun book, because it is a really fun book. And, you know, like if you're a mom and you have, like my mom had four kids, right? And if you said to her, which one's your favorite? Well, I don't have a favorite, she'd say. You know, you're all my favorite. And so I look at my books as my kids. You know, I do have a son. He's 16 years of age. And, of course, I have one, so he's my favorite.
Oh, well, there you go.
But when I look at my books, you know, five books that I've written, and if someone said to me, what's your favorite? It's this one.
Oh.
It's Be a Dog with a Bone, because I feel it's so close to me and who I am, and the thing that's really driven me through everything, you know, everything that I've done. And I love dogs. You know, it's like fun, and it's playful, and it's, you know, it's enticing and inspiring. And what was really fun about this book, when Hay House bought the rights to the book, I submitted the manuscript. And, of course, this is the third book that they were publishing of mine. And the editor and the senior editor kept sending me emails. And it was really funny, because they'd send emails and they'd go, oh, my God, we're having so much fun with your book, and we just read this chapter. That's so hilarious, and we really love this example. And I'd be getting these emails all the time. I put a big smile on my face. I didn't have that experience with the other two books. Now, I'm not saying they're not great books. They are great books. But this one's just very different in its style, you know, just being that light, you know, sort of the playfulness and the lightheartedness of a really important subject of being persistent.
Right. And, you know, you have lovely cartoons in it.
I love those. I do. I bought the rights to those from Randy Glassbergen, and I'm so glad I did. It was such a phenomenal investment to buy the rights to the cartoons, and I tell people they're, you know, probably the best part of the book.
They are fun.
They're great.
Yeah. So equally important is your values.
Mm-hmm.
And you talk a lot about in the book, certainly your health, family, friends. You know, it's really important, but you've included honesty, integrity, your finances, and to not lose sight of what your priorities are. I mean, and plus, you know, it's a dog. So, you know, I like the fact that you talk about, you know, you have to have fun. It's light.
Yeah.
It's not something about, you know, I think it's great.
Wonderful. Thank you. I appreciate that.
So teach an old dog new tricks. And I think, you know, you talk about how we're very much like puppies, that, you know, our optimal time for training is when we're young.
It is.
But we don't learn that. We don't learn how to achieve our desires until we're in adulthood. And so we have to have the discipline. And we're creatures of habit, so we really need to almost train ourselves.
That's so true. Absolutely. And I use that example in the book of when my mom my mom and dad, they got a dog. This is a dog named Heidi, and she's passed on now. And so have my mom and dad. And when my mom and dad got Heidi, Heidi was a year old. And she wasn't well taken care of. I mean, she was not a rescue puppy, but she was in a home where they, you know, didn't seem to take care of her. And so they, you know, they trained her, you know, from the time she was one until, you know, obviously till she was starting to pass on. But when Heidi was 14, which is really considered old age for a small dog, that Heidi started, you know, going to the washroom inside my mom's house, you know, on the floor and on the carpet and things like that. And my mom said I had to train her again. And it was just like, you know, training her all over again. Now, of course, as an old dog, you know, things start to happen with the body. But, you know, she found that Heidi just became lazy. You know, she just got lazy in her ways. And that was part of why she was not, you know, doing her business outside, you know, or maybe it was cold and she didn't want to bother going outside because it was too cold outside. And so sometimes you have to teach them, you know, no, 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 this is not acceptable behavior. You got to get back out there and you know, play by the rules type of thing.
And it's what we do. We revert back to our old lessons that we sort of took on. And
true.
We have a difficult time sometimes having the discipline. I mean, it's you know, to put it in a diet, I mean, we know what's right for our body and what's good for our body. We just have to have the discipline to stay at it.
That's it. Absolutely true.
We know this stuff. It's not rocket science. It's, you know, it's health. We know it. So
yeah.
It's the same as what we need to do to be this persistent, very positive, you know, as you call it, you know, the College of Personal Growth. I mean, we have to, it has to take all of our energy in. We have to be very focused on what we want and it, not make it serious, but, and not forget all of the rest, because you're making all of your points very clear. It's just, we have to do what we have to do, but not revert back. And we have to sometimes learn new tricks.
That's right. The tricks of success.
Yeah. So I think, you know, this is what I like about the book, because it's so real and it's so, you can understand it so easily, especially when you put it in dog terms.
Do you like dogs, Lori?
You know, I love dogs. I'm a cat person, but I do love dogs. I, you know, every day when I go for my walks on the boardwalk, I mean, I have all these dogs that come up to me, and I must have this energy. I don't know.
Sounds like it. Well, that's an interesting thing, because you love cats. You're a cat person.
I
find that a lot of cat people love this book, too.
Well, yeah. Well, because it's so, it's fun. It's playful. It's, again, taking something that's serious and making it light and not this deep focus on, you know, on a heavy topic, but yet,
yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes guidance and information are all that you need.
Yeah, that's right. Sometimes that's all you need, just a little guidance.
That we sometimes get confused and we need to sniff out the answers and gather more information.
That's it. That's why I love surrounding myself with great materials, you know, with books and with CDs and with videos and things like that, because, you know, sometimes we just get off track and forget what we need to be remembering or forget what we need to be feeling in a particular time. And so if we surround ourselves with great information, we feed ourselves in very nutritious, meaning nutritious for our soul and for our body, of course, ways that, you know, it's definitely beneficial. It's beneficial for us, and it benefits anyone who's around us as well.
And I like your idea of, you know, if you get somebody who knows what you're wanting, who's already an expert in their field, and then follow them around like a puppy.
That's right. Follow them around like a puppy dog.
Because they've already learned something, and I guess that's what people did for you, or with you, is that you'd already learned how to make something successful, so you assisted them by doing what you've been doing.
That's absolutely true, and, you know, it's like we need to learn from those who have blazed the trail before us, and
mm-hmm.
you don't have to learn necessarily the hard way, And if someone has, you know, been there, done that, it's like when I got my book, when I realized, when I self-published my first book, and I realized, okay, well, I need to learn how to market this. And I didn't know how to market a book. I didn't know the first thing about the book business. And so I thought, well, I need to find the people that do know about this business, who have achieved their results, and they're the ones that I want to learn from.
Hmm.
And so I chased them. I hunted them down like
a hound
dog.
And then they hunted
dog.
You. That's good. And then it turned around, and they did it for you, which
That's
is interesting.
Right.
Yeah. I like this part about how we downplay our dreams. And sometimes we do it because of what others think. And sometimes we're doing it because we're not wanting, you know, we're trying to be polite and humble, and or we're embarrassed, or we get enforced the dream by thinking that our dream is arrogant because it's so big. And so these are things that are destructive for us and stops us from you know, really getting excited about our dreams and allowing that passion to move us.
Yeah, so don't let someone else steal it away from you.
Yeah. And I think that happens, though, that we're, you know, we think, oh, if I dream this big, you know, then I'm being egotistical, or, you know, it's so you try and downplay it all. And I think that that's something that a lot of people do.
That's like, who do you think you are,
mm-hmm.
type of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
I know when I had written my first book, and my family was thinking, like, you got to be kidding me. You're writing a book, you know, this type of attitude. And then, and that's probably why it was called The Brat, because I thought, I don't care what you think or say or whatever. It's just I'm going for it. You know, this is something that I deeply want to do. And then, of course, when I had my big launch, and, you know, my family was the first one there to support me and help me.
Mm.
But initially, it was like, you got to be kidding me. Well, that's okay.
Yeah,
that's,
and you did
all right.
It. So I like this chapter called Don't Chase Your Tail. And then you talk about, you know, I mean, sometimes it gets us nowhere, but you talk about the fact that, you know, that dogs turn around 3 times before they sit down. Talk about that. That's a very interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. I watch dogs, you know, do that. And like my dog, I'd have this beautiful, soft, cushiony bed, and she would go around and around and around, and then I think, why is she doing that? So I decided to do a little research and find out, why do dogs turn around 3 times before they sit down? And so when I did the research, what I found is that dogs actually descend from the wolf family. And so when they were wild wolves, you know, they're living in the wild, they slept on branches and leaves. And so what they would do is they tamp down the branches and the leaves to create a more comfortable resting place for them. And so that's why they would do that. And so nowadays, of course, dogs that live inside and in nice, comfortable homes, or like in mine where I have these beautiful beds for them. I was actually looking out for a new bed for my one dog last week.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, turning around 3 times, there's really no point in it. You know, maybe it's just getting their bodies ready to lay down. But their beds are not made of branches and leaves. They're made of nice, cushy,
mm-hmm.
comfy materials.
So what habits are we continuously doing that no longer serve us?
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
That's it, exactly. Like barking up the wrong tree.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
All right. I mean, how many times have we been, like, I was in sales for, you know, a big part of my career, which I'm very grateful for, because sales is, you know, one of the greatest skills you can ever learn.
Yeah.
And so when I was in sales, you know, sometimes I'd be chasing down a lead and realize that, you know, it wasn't getting me anywhere. And so sometimes we have to notice, you know, when we're barking, you know, barking up the wrong tree.
Right. And then you talk about ingesting things that are good for you, because a lot of times I think we just don't really think, you know, I laugh at myself because I'm pretty sure my cat eats much better than I do. I think, you know, we often do that for our animals. But, you know, I think because our body is our temple, we really have to be, you know, aware. And I like that you brought in health and your emotional state in the book, because I think it's, you know, we get so focused sometimes that we sabotage our success, or we, you know, we go so hard and so determined that we actually lose some of the things that are important to us.
Yes, that's true. And they affect our emotions. You know, we eat horribly. You know, like, you know, this morning my husband made breakfast, and this is a rare event, I must tell you. I didn't even know he could cook. So several years after we're together. So my husband made breakfast, and I noticed when I was eating. Now, it wasn't anything elaborate. He had made eggs. But I noticed when I was eating that my mood was changing, and I felt like crying. Mm. And I was thinking at the time, does protein make me cry? You know, like, it was having this weird effect on me. Mm. And, you know, I'm not saying whether it does or it doesn't, but you'll notice that if you're eating horribly or drinking soda pop or alcohol or you know, burgers and fries and horrible stuff, you know, it takes away from you. It's not feeding your body. It's not fueling your body. It's not strengthening your body. And, I mean, you can eat any way you want, but I think it really depends on dreams again. You know, what is it that you really want to do? Obviously, athletes eat very differently from, you know, someone who's a couch potato.
But
I believe that it's important to pay attention to what we're putting in our body, and whether it's, you know, poisonous or toxin, and whether it's fueling us or not, and you know, just make a conscious decision. Is, you know, is this going to strengthen me, or is this going to weaken me? You know, is this going to help me, or is this going to hurt me? Not that we have to sit there and look at everything we're going to put in our mouth and ask that question, but just be conscious, you know, that we need to ingest things that are good for us, because other things, such as, you know, some of the things I mentioned, they poison. They poison us, and they poison success.
Mm-hmm. And so I think another big one, obviously, is our negativity.
That's it. Yes, it is.
And that's
true enough.
Something that can really impact, because it puts us in a place where if we're not aware, we certainly go on a downward spiral.
You're absolutely right about that. We need to watch, you know, watch what we say, how we say it, and just be consciously aware.
Because if you're not in a passionate place, you're not going to create that passion.
You're right.
Hmm. No, you're right. This is your book.
Thank you. I'm going to read this again. it's a quick read, too. Like, how long did it take for you to read it?
Well, it didn't take very long, but, you know, I was worrying time-wise. It was like, okay, I've got to get this, and I need to make notes, and so.
Yeah, I was thinking that. I love books that are quick reads, you know, like when you get on a plane in Ottawa and you're flying to Toronto, which is a lovely 42-minute flight, and you can read a book while you're on the plane. I love books like that.
That's true. And I'm sure if I had it in book form, it probably would take that long.
Yes.
Yes.
I'll make sure you get one in the book form. I know you have electronic form right now, but I'll make sure you get one in book form.
Lovely.
And it's hardcover. And this is amazing to me. It's a hardcover book. And you look at Amazon.com, it's $10. They're selling it for $10, I think, in 17 cents or something
nice.
Like that.
Nice.
That's amazing. I haven't seen the hardcover edition yet. It's supposed to be on its way to me. I can't wait to get it.
Now, this one must be close to your heart, because it's Be a Little Dog with a Big Dog Attitude.
Yeah.
Because you have little dogs.
Yes, I do have little dogs. And one of them thinks he's gigantic.
Which,
he just sees nothing. He is not afraid of anything.
Right, which is the point of your chapter, is that, you know, don't let... they don't realize that they're small. They don't even think about that.
That's right.
They're never intimidated.
Right.
I mean, you see these little puppies. I was the cutest thing the other day. A tiny little, puppy going up to this huge Great Dane.
Oh, cute.
It was adorable. And I think the Great Dane lied down so that the puppy could actually, you know, smell it. And, you know, it was so adorable.
Well, dogs have a great sense. I mean, they can just tell things, you know. It's like, they'll notice, like if it's an aggressive dog, they'll notice if you're afraid.
Mm-hmm.
And so the same thing with big dogs. If they see a little dog who's got a big dog attitude, mm-hmm. and that little dog's not afraid, well, there's no harm, or there's no, you know, feeling of, I need to protect myself.
Mm-hmm. And you know, so that's it. Don't have your fear. Don't be intimidated. It's you know, see possibilities, not the impossible. See everything as a possibility.
Yes.
Yeah, I like how, you know, I just, it's a great way of putting it, because it puts it in a way that people understand. Oh, and I like the can-do Keaton story.
Yeah, it is a cute story. Well, the dog that's on the cover of the book is a dog named Charlie. That's my ex-husband's name, by the way. But Charlie's not a dog. And anyways, Charlie, who's on the cover of the book, is actually a Canadian champion bulldog.
Mm.
He was like the number one bulldog back in 2002. And I found him at a dog show, because I was looking to get a dog for the cover, and I was talking to my graphics guy, and he said, well, you know, I found different bulldogs we can put on your cover, but you're going to have to pay this fee and that fee, and you can only do so many copies, and you're restricted to the number of years.
Oh, dear.
And I said, well, this isn't going to work. So he said, well, then you have to go find a bulldog. And we couldn't use Zelda. I mean, Zelda's, you know, there's rights to Zelda, and Zelda wasn't available. So I had to go find a bulldog. Well, it just happened that there was a dog show in Ottawa. So I went to the dog show, and I saw Charlie there. And so I went up to Charlie's owner, Elizabeth, and I said to her, I said, I'd like to take a photo of Charlie for my book, Be a Dog with a Bone. And I said, are you willing to let me do that? And she said, sure. So Charlie lives in Oshawa. So I drove down to Oshawa with my camera, and I took that picture. Now, Charlie did not hold the bone, by the way, so we had to graphically put it in its mouth.
Really?
But Keaton is a friend of Charlie's.
No, wasn't that great?
Yeah, and so, you know, when Elizabeth was so excited to have Charlie go on the book cover, you know, she invited her friend over, Deneen. And so Deneen came over, and I told her about the book and all of that. And she told me this story about Keaton and how she had registered Keaton, her bulldog, into agility training. And it's like, what? You know, like, bulldogs don't do agility. And that was the story that she told us, that, you know, she enrolled this dog, and nobody thought that bulldog could do this. And, of course, she, you know, she was firmly believed that Keaton could do it. And of course, Keaton was just not doing anything like all the other dogs in the class. And then one day, Keaton pulls himself up and over the A-frame, and it was like the most amazing feat that had ever been accomplished.
And what was, you know, in the story, how, you know, he was just so proud and didn't care that nobody had seen him.
Right.
Nobody had seen him the first time he did it. He was just like, there, I showed you I could do it.
And then, you know, she told me that Keaton actually plays the piano.
Wow.
Remember she said that?
He plays
the piano and works on freestyle dance routines. So Keaton's been doing some pretty amazing things.
Yes. And so if a dog can all that. What can we do? I mean, think about it. If a dog can do some of those things, what's our potential is infinite.
You're absolutely right.
And we have to believe in ourselves so that we know.
Uh-huh.
And so when you feel you've reached the end of your leash, go further.
Yes.
And I like, you know, because I think, you know, how many short leashes do we give ourselves? And I think That's a very interesting analogy, but I think we limit ourselves all the time.
We do. We absolutely do. We are that expression. We are our worst enemy, own worst enemy.
And that if you knew that all you had to do was push a button,
yes,
to release yourself or to have freedom or to have those infinite possibilities, would you do it? Could you do it? I think there's a lot of people. That's the question.
Yes.
And what are the old beliefs that are holding us back that we can't seem to go beyond?
Mm-hmm. We need to look at those.
And take a rest. Dogs definitely know how to take a rest.
They do, don't they?
They do, and they stop right there. They don't have a problem with saying, okay, have I gone too far? I'm going to stop right now.
That's true. I take my little girl Noelle out for a walk, and when it's hot, you know, in our hot summer days, and take her for a walk, and she'll go on to someone's lawn and just lay down.
Yeah.
I was like, what are you doing? We're out here for a walk.
Apparently you're out there for a walk. She's not.
She's like, I've had enough.
Yeah.
And it's like, I am not carrying you back. Too cute.
Do you?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes, yes. It's good exercise for me. Very little 20 pounder.
Mm. Oh, she's 20 pounds.
She's overweight.
Oh, okay.
She's cute.
She sounds cute. Building faith.
Oh, their picture will be on the cover.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Good.
Well, we had a photo shoot. It was so much fun. Me and my two doggies.
Aw. That sounds adorable. So building faith. Faith is one of the areas that we have to build to know and have more confidence in our own abilities. That it's a strong emotion to build with regards to moving our passions.
Yes, it is. It's an important, one of the most important emotions. And it is within us. You know, sometimes people don't feel it, but we've got the ability to do it, to feel it, to experience it. And even if we're not feeling total faith, we can still move up the level, you know, move up our switch from fear to faith, even if it's just one feeling state at a time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, drool onto others as you would have them drool onto you.
Yeah, isn't that the truth? You know, just you know, what you do to another, you do to yourself. So we treat another person with respect and with love, and that's what we'll get back.
Yeah. Dogs embody unconditional love. Your canine companion will love you no matter what kind of day you're having.
That's one of the great things about dogs and cats. Yeah, they're just going to love you. You know, come in the house and you've had a really bad day, you know. Some of the family members want to avoid you.
Yes.
Not your dog.
No, and you can go into a store and come back 5 minutes later and they're just as excited to see you.
Isn't that the truth?
Where we, on the other hand, are afraid of being hurt, rejected, disappointment. We hold grudges. We have judgments. We do all sorts of things that, you know, can block our progress. And, you know, we need to really think about what can we have the forgive and forget behavior that dogs do? Like, you know, what is stopping us from having that unconditional love? Yet we can give that same unconditional love to our pets. It's a very interesting concept, and it's all brought up in this book, which I find, you know, very thought-provoking, and as fun as it is, there are points in there that are really important.
Well, I'm coming back as a dog in my next life.
Okay. So come on out of the doghouse. Courageously step forward into your growth.
That's it. Yeah, I tell my husband, I said, I'm either coming back as a guy or a dog, because they've got it made. Definitely dogs, but I'd want to be a dog that's in a home like ours, where they're king and queen.
Yes, okay. Well, the karma, you know, of you giving your dogs that probably will allow you to do that if you really want to come back as a dog.
I hope so. They remember that if they come back as a human and I'm their dog.
Well, you talk about how sometimes, you know, the fear, we often hold back and we're afraid because we think that we're going to be greeted by a scary monster. And sometimes if we thought about, well, what would happen if we had a friendly dog?
Yeah. Sometimes a scary monster staring us back in the mirror. That's something to think about.
You know, we're running out of time and I'm not quite there yet. I like the little story that you had of your neighbor's dog, Holly.
Oh, yeah, when she goes to the door, she wants to be let out. She goes, bark for what you want. That's in that chapter, right? Yeah, Holly goes to the door and you know, she says to her owner, like, let me out. And Cheryl is her owner and stands at the door, and Cheryl goes to the door and opens the door, and Holly just sits there. She's still inside. So Holly's got the door open going, okay. Or Cheryl has the door open while Holly's sitting on the floor going, okay, you know, you're ready to go? And She just sits there, and then finally Cheryl, you know, gets frustrated and goes, okay, and she goes to close the door, and just as she's about to close the door, Holly runs out.
Right.
It's like a game she plays, you know.
And we play the same game quite often.
Yeah, and she just, you know, it makes her think that there's windows of opportunity, and sometimes we almost miss them.
Mm-hmm. And hopefully it's just almost, but I think a lot of times we do.
Yes, that's true. It's a great metaphor, great lesson.
Mm-hmm. Dog instincts, trust your own inner knowing.
Oh, yeah, it's like your tummy. Your tummy is your best barometer. It can give you so much information.
Yes,
so trust that inner knowing.
Listen to your inner voice. Mm-hmm. Stop being afraid.
That's right.
Yes. Bark for what you want.
Yeah. I'm very good.
Don't
at that.
Keep quiet about your needs and desires. I bet you are.
Ask for what you want.
Yes. Because we, you know, it's funny because sometimes we forget to ask. We think that people know. And
we're afraid. Yeah, we think people know. You're right. Or we're afraid to ask her.
Mm-hmm. Bark gently and respectfully.
That's right, yeah. That's an important part of it.
It is. And don't be intimidated by negative responses. It just means you need to go further and deeper.
Mm-hmm.
Wag your tail, be happy, and show appreciation. You know, I think that's one of the things that we don't do enough, gratitude and appreciation to others.
Yes, that's true.
And you think of a dog, I mean, they're always being happy and excited, and, you know, they certainly know how to appreciate and show their gratitude much more than we do.
They do. They do, like licking your hand, mm-hmm. and thank you, little doggy bone, and you're right.
What was it? The dog was going to be a psychiatrist in the one comic, and he said, well, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to lick your face and wag my tail.
That's
until
right.
you
That's
feel better about yourself.
And my therapy is quite simple. Yeah, it's adorable.
So keep your nose wet, and what to do when you're feeling rough. We've sort of talked about that, but sometimes
yes.
we push ourselves beyond our physical limitations, and it's really about, you know, not just about what you eat, but also, you know, taking the time and really, you know, just figuring out what you need and not being, I think sometimes we forget to play.
That's right, and we need to stick our head out the window, right?
I like how, you know, a dog will shake their bodies to dry off. If
yes.
we could just see all of our problems and our fears as just water.
Yeah, yeah, shake it off. I'll do that sometimes in my workshop. You know, I'll just talk about emotions that you feel that don't feel good. And I'll talk about when you see a dog, you know, coming out of the water, they just shake it off. So
mm-hmm.
it's a strategy.
Mm-hmm.
Strategy to change how you're feeling.
And grooming is important as well.
It is.
Yeah.
Absolutely, for how you feel about yourself and for how you're going to be perceived.
Exactly. And I'm trying to whip through this now. Your last chapter, because we
wrap up your success.
Yes.
Take a bite out of life.
That's it. That's a big thing about you know, we really need to just enjoy. And
I remember when, that reminds me of when my book made the New York Times list, and when it was launched, and it was just an absolutely wild time, and so many exciting things were happening. And a friend of mine called me up, and she said, you know, how's it going? And I was telling her, I said, oh, this is going on, that's going on. And she said, are you having fun? And it really stopped me in my tracks, and I thought, you know what? I wasn't having as much fun as I could. I was stressed.
Yeah.
You know, I just felt pulled in so many different directions, and you know, it was a great reminder
mm-hmm.
of you know, just lap up the success and enjoy it
and celebrate.
And celebrate. Yes.
Celebrate.
I love that cartoon.
Yeah.
Where the male and female dog are sitting at the restaurant table, and I don't have it in front of me, but if my memory serves me correctly, it's something like, you know, he orders from the waiter, we'd like some water.
We'd like tonight to be special. Could you get some water from the toilet and put it in a champagne bottle?
Yeah. Isn't that cute?
It's very cute. A poodle and a mutt. That's very cute.
That's my favorite cartoon in the whole book.
Yeah, you know, they're very cute cartoons in here.
That's great. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
I really did. So I want to thank you again, because you get to be the first interview, and I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. But,
I sure did. I'm wagging my tail.
Yes, it was quite lovely, and again, I appreciate it very much. So thank you very much, Peggy.
My absolute pleasure, Lori. Thank you, and I'd love to come back anytime in the future and serve your audience again.
Yay. Okay, so we'll have you in September.
Terrific.
Okay.
Okay, take care.
All right, you too.
Bye-bye.